My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
The best conversations I have with my colleagues are the ones that happen when no one is looking, when we're not 100% sure yet what to write.
Hopefully, having conversations like this can help you figure out your own point of view. That's kind of our job as Washington Post opinions columnists. I'm Charles Lane, Deputy Opinion Editor.
And I'm Amanda Ripley, a contributing columnist. We're going to bring you into these conversations on a new podcast called Impromptu.
Follow Impromptu now, wherever you listen.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The shocking math. How Bitcoin will reach $43 billion. We're going to break down the math. Now, in life, there are no such thing as certainties. There's only probabilities, and we bet on those probabilities every single day. That's exactly what markets are. And Bitcoin has beaten the odds over and over. It's been called dead hundreds of times. It's crashed dozens of times, and yet it keeps coming back stronger every single time. And now today, it's crossing what we call the chasm. As we see BlackRock and Fidelity adding millions of people, we have three US presidential candidates openly discussing Bitcoin. And so today, for those of you with an open mind and are willing to understand that, again, everything in life is a probability, I'm gonna break down the math. I'm gonna break down the future potential of Bitcoin like it's never been done before. I'm gonna show you the odds. I'm gonna show you the path it will take. We're gonna look at the different price points along the way, the time frames, and of course, how to play this if you're a huge Bitcoin skeptic or you're a diehard Bitcoin believer. Either way, this is for you. So let's go. All right, welcome back. If you're new to the channel, my name is Mark Moss. I make these videos, of course, to change the way you think about money, because almost everything you've learned is wrong, and it's changing. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about a new form of money, and most people don't understand it because, as my good friend Jeff Booth, who we'll hear about later, he likes to say that it's very hard to see a new system, to understand a new system when you're stuck in an existing system. So look, I get it, it's difficult. So have an open mind. Now, if you want the short answer, where is it going? I'm gonna break down the math to how we get to 43 billion. And for some of us, in our lifetime, all right? I'm gonna break down the math, the path, all that. But first, I wanna tell you a story. Last night, I was watching a brand new TV show. I think it was called The Tracker. It's not super good. It was okay, it was the very first episode that I saw, but there's this guy and he goes and finds people, like people that have rewards and bounties, things like that. But he would, throughout the show, he kept saying, if we go now, we have a 95% chance, but if we wait an hour, we only have a 5% chance. If I hurry up and get you out now, I think we have a 50% chance, but if we wait, and he kept talking about probabilities all the time. We have a probability of this now, if we wait, my probability drops to this. And probably, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 times throughout the show, he would do that. And that's how life is. So the first thing I want to let you know is that, all right? So the problem that I see too many people making is they think very linear. Everything's black or white. It's this or that. There's no way this can happen, or there's no way this can happen. And that's not how life works, okay? There's a world of possibilities. Everything is possible. And then there's probabilities or percentages that we think that this can happen. So you may be the biggest Bitcoin skeptic in the world, but still ask yourself this question. Are you 100% sure, 100% guaranteed there's no way Bitcoin will ever succeed from here? And of course, the answer is no. You can't say that. Now, you might say there's a 90% chance. Okay, great. Then that 10%, you might want to listen. All right, does that make sense? So think about things in terms of probability, and let me break this down for you in what's gonna be a masterclass. So the short answer is, like I said, 43 billion. If you just wanna shut it off right now, you could have just read the title, but let me break down the math for you. But more importantly, like I said, how does it get there and when? When does it happen? I bet those are the questions that you wanna know. And that's what I'm gonna break down. Okay, so if we start to break this down, the very first thing we have to understand is, what is it? When in Silicon Valley about 15 years ago, when they were trying to raise money for Uber, they would go, hey, I have this new app I'm building, I wanna raise 100 million, and they'd say, what is it, right? I'm a venture capital investor, I've been investing in venture cap for probably over a dozen years now. That's what we do, what is it? So first of all, what is Bitcoin? Is it a brand new technology? Sure. Yeah, it's technology. What is it disrupting? So, okay, it's an app. Uber's an app. What is it disrupting? It's disrupting the taxi industry, the limo industry, the rideshare industry. And then we look at how big those markets are, and then we look at how much we think you can pull from those. We're gonna break the math down in a minute, but first, what is it? So, yes, it's a brand new technology. It's an app. What is it doing? Well, it's sort of like money, a medium of exchange. The white paper says it's peer-to-peer cash, electronic cash. So we exchange it for money, a medium of exchange. It's also a store of value, as we call an SOV. All right, now it is winning the war of store of value, which eventually could evolve into the next stage. I'm gonna break that evolutionary path down for you so you can see the time frame. But let's just talk about the store of value, because I wanna simplify this. And I know it sounds crazy, but I'm gonna make it sound very conservative so we could overshoot it. So let's just talk about the store of value right now, all right? So what we can see, many headlines, I can continue to pull them. Goldman Sachs, one of the biggest financial institutions in the United States and the world, says Bitcoin will, not could, not should, but will compete with gold as store of value. This is Goldman Sachs. We know that Larry Fink, the largest asset manager in the world from BlackRock now, went on TV a month ago saying that Bitcoin is a flight to safety, right? So it's a store of value. We know this. We can see Cathie Wood, who runs one of the biggest tech funds in Wall Street. She says that Bitcoin, describing Bitcoin as both, so it's both, it's multiple things. It's more things than we'll know in the future. Both a store of value and a risk-off asset, meaning we use it to store our wealth, but we also use it to when there's times of risk or high inflation. Wood emphasized that when compared to gold, the upward trajectory hints at the possibility of overtaking gold as a more valuable investment in the future. Okay, so you can see this from any number of people. It is a store of value. It's winning the store of value. Bitcoin is like digital gold, all right? But it's better than gold. I'm not gonna break down all the ways in this video. If you want a separate video comparing Bitcoin to gold, let me know, I can make another video on that. But you have to understand that it doesn't compete directly with gold because it's better from that standpoint. Mm-hmm. And again, the markets tell us that. That's not just my opinion. If you're a gold bug, I am too. I've been a gold bug since 2008. I own gold, I talk about gold all the time, but you still have to understand this. Don't be mad, this is what the markets tell us. As a matter of fact, we can see here the pace of inflows. Now we have these new Bitcoin ETFs, so the markets are now voting. The pace of money going into the ETFs is remarkable. In just 15 days, in only 15 days, the first 15 days open, the Bitcoin ETFs attracted over $25 billion, comparable to the market cap of the largest gold producer, Barrick Gold. Within 15 days, more money went into these Bitcoin ETFs than the entire market cap of the largest gold producer. Think about that. We can see right here, this unparalleled growth to the second largest assets under management, AUM, among US commodity ETFs, establishing them as the new digital gold. So they surpass silver, and they are growing way faster than gold ever did, and they're catching up to gold at the rate they're at. They could overtake gold in the next year, all right? So the markets are telling us this. It's not just commentators, all right? But we have to also understand, as a store of value, it's not competing in an industry, right? So Uber was competing against taxis. Uber was competing against limousines. Bitcoin, as a store of value, doesn't compete with industries. It's not competing with Visa or PayPal. For people to make those comparisons is ridiculous. It's a store of value. So it competes against other store of value assets. That's what it's actually competing against. And we can see that the market that it's going after, the market it's competing in, is value itself, okay? So it is a new technology, but it's not Visa. It's not MasterCard, it's not Facebook, it's competing against other store value assets such as gold for value itself, all right? Hopefully that makes sense. Now, We also have to realize that the world has changed a lot. And what's happened is, as the world has rapidly changed, money and our technology into store of value has not. So we are in the digital revolution. I'm sure you know that by now. You're watching me over the internet. So of course you're part of the digital revolution. What we've seen is that while the digital revolution has digitized everything, music, movies, books, videos, everything's become digitized, our money hasn't. And actually, this cool image, all these images were created by ChatGPT. Pretty interesting. And this shows us how all of these technologies have become digitized, books, movies, music, etc. And the last thing to be digitized that hasn't yet, it's happening right now, is digitizing value, digitizing wealth. That's what we're doing right now. And it's a monetary evolution. We have to understand that what we use as money today, well, gold was money for 5,000 years, has been an evolutionary process. And this is the next step, the digitization of value. This is where it's competing. That's how big the market is.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big MQL man. Then he just kept saying things like, the more MQLs, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means marketing qualified lead. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the MQL man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. oracle.com/strategic.
The 2024 presidential campaign features two candidates who are very well known to Americans. And yet, there's complexity at every turn. Criminal trials for one of those candidates. Young voters who are angry. The Campaign Moment podcast from The Washington Post gives you what matters. I'm Aaron Blake, and I'm covering my 10th election cycle. My colleagues and I have insights that you won't find anywhere else. So follow The Campaign Moment right now, wherever you're listening.
Okay, now let me just break this down to something that you can understand so we can have something to build off of. Okay, so as I said, gold was money for 5,000 years, right? So at the end of the day, we don't want money. I know it's a shocking statement to make. I know you want a lot of money. No, we don't want money. What we want is the goods and services that money buys us. We want food, we want clothes, we want a house, we want to travel, things like that. We want the goods and services. Gold or money is what we use to get those things, and we can hold our value, our wealth, our energy in that money until we're ready to deploy it to get those goods and services that we want. So if goods and services are wealth and money is a way to acquire it, then what we do is we take all the goods and services of the world, the wealth, divided by all the gold. That's the price. It's a unit of account. Everything is priced in gold or priced in money. So think about this. Gold was money. It was the store of value for 5,000 years. It was the unit of account. Everything was priced in it. Now gold, because of technology, the world started evolving and we had global trade taking off, globalization, but gold's very slow. If I want to pay from California, somebody in New York with gold, it takes a long time to get that gold there. So what we did is we put the gold in the banks, and the banks then used a ledger to say, hey, you know, from California, now the guy in New York, now on the ledger shows he has the gold. The gold didn't actually move, they just changed the ledger. That was a new piece of technology. All right, But that didn't actually solve anything. And so what we did is we created paper dollars, fiat money, paper dollars that represented the gold in the bank. So we had one US dollar was equal to 20 ounces of gold. Let me show you the chart. This is the gold price chart for the last 100 years. So what we can see since the 1800s, 20 US dollars equaled 1 ounce of gold. Then in 1933, I've talked about this extensively, because all the gold went into the bank, the government just took it all. They seized it all. They don't want to say they seized it. They bought it from you forcibly. Then what they did is they revalued it to now be $35 for 1 ounce of gold. You can see that 20, and then it was 35 this whole time. Now this red line here is where we ended the gold standard and we no longer had relation to the price of gold. But the reason why I want you to understand this for right now is because at this time, all the dollars in existence were divided by all the gold. And it was $20 for every 1 ounce. And then it was $35 because they printed way too many of them. That's why they had to seize the gold. Then it was $35 for every 1 ounce of gold. You're understanding this. But again, in 1971, we left the gold standard. And you can see by this chart, right here is where we left. Now, what I did is I took a trend line, and you can see the trend line we were on. And if we hadn't left the gold standard here, we would have about this much money in circulation today. This is the M2 chart. This shows how much dollars are in circulation, okay? So we would have about this much, but of course they would have needed to get more gold. But then 1971, we got a new trend line, and that took us to here. Right around here in the year 2000, we got a new trend line that takes us to here. 2008, we got a new trend line that takes us to here. In 2020, we have a new trend line, and look at that trend that we're on. Here's the problem. They've added more of those paper currencies, but they didn't add more gold because, of course, we're no longer on a gold system, which is why you can see this right here. All right. But you have to understand this to understand where we're going. We had all the dollars in existence divided by all the gold, and that's gone. But that's the way it works, and we have to go back to it. We're in about a 52-year experiment that's gone horribly wrong. I'll show you how it's gone horribly wrong in a minute. Okay, so now that you understand that, you hear a lot of people talking about maybe going back to the gold standard, the rise of BRICS. BRICS are going to launch their own gold-backed currency. You've heard me talk about that extensively. You have Jim Rickards and Peter Schiff talking about we're going to go back to gold. And the reason why is because gold was money for 5,000 years. For 50 years, we've tried this little fiat experiment. It's failed horribly wrong. And so the only way that governments will get trust back into fiat currency is to back it with something like gold again. You've heard that many times. So this is how this would work. Let me break it down. In the United States, there's about $20 trillion of currency, of paper, of fiat currency, $20 trillion. The US supposedly, I don't know if I believe this, holds 8,000 tons of gold. So then what you would do is you would take the 8,000 tons is 282 million ounces. So you'd take the 20 trillion divided by the 282 million ounces, and that would give you a new gold price of $70,000 per ounce of gold. At the $20 per ounce of gold up until 1933, the $35 up until 1971, that's how it worked. And to go back to a gold standard, 100% backed, this would be the new math. That's why gold bugs want this to go back to a gold standard, and they want to hold gold because they think their $2,000 an ounce gold will go to $70,000 an ounce. It'd be pretty amazing if that happened. Although Bitcoin's going to do better. I'll break the math down. Now, we also have to think globally. All right, because this is not just the US. The US dollar is the global reserve currency. We also have the euro dollar going on. So we have to think globally. So if we think globally, there's about $87 trillion globally. And about, we don't really know because China doesn't really report it properly, but approximately 187,000 tons of gold in the whole world. All the gold in the world that's ever been brought above ground is still above ground. It's not really a consumable good. I think all the gold in the world fits in like a football field. It's not even that much. 187,000 tons, which is 6 billion ounces. So we take the $87 trillion of currency divided by the 6 billion ounces would give us about a $13,000 price per gold. Does that make sense? Okay, so now that we've gone through that math, you're ready to understand the next step in the process. Okay, so you remember, we've made a couple cases here. Gold was what we use to measure or price things in. Wealth is goods and services, not gold. Wealth is the goods and services. The gold is what it was priced in, and so we had to divide the goods and services by the wealth, by the gold.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year. Equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
So now, what other global assets are there? How do we measure how much goods and services are out there? How much wealth is out there? Well, there's a couple ways we can look at this. All of these global assets are, well, we're looking at the global assets right now for this math in store of value assets. There's lots of assets, but we don't store our wealth in all types of assets. So just for this exercise, being conservative, I know this sounds crazy, we're only looking at what we call store of value assets, things that you would put your money into, such as gold is a store of value asset. Real estate, sure, I have a house there, but I park my wealth in real estate as well. Bonds, stocks, things like that, okay? So if we look at that, here's a chart from Jesse Croesus. He did an amazing write-up on this. We're gonna link to it in the description down below if you wanna read his write-up and breakdown of this. But we have store of value assets right here, gold, cars, other collectibles. So rich people buy really old collectible cars, things like that. They store their wealth in there. One of my buddies down the street's got a couple Mustangs that are worth millions of dollars. Pretty cool. He doesn't drive them. Fine art, of course, stock market, right? We buy stock to put our wealth in there. Real estate, like I said, not just your home, but other real estate that you invest into. Bonds, and of course, money. If we add those up, we have $12 trillion in gold, $6 trillion in collectibles, $18 trillion in fine art, $115 trillion. And you do the math. It totals $900 trillion if we add all that up. Now, again, back to the Uber example, Uber is going to disrupt taxis, limos, vans. What percentage do we think it can get from each of those markets? So conservatively, do we think Bitcoin could capture 50% of the gold market cap? I think so. Goldman Sachs says it's going to overtake it. So 50%, that puts Bitcoin at $6 trillion. Cars, other collectibles, it's not going to take the whole thing. People like cars, people like collectibles, people like fine art. But could it take 5%? I think that's reasonable. Fine art, 5%? Sure. Stock market, 15%? I think reasonable. Real estate, 15%? Okay. Bonds, 30%? Money, 30%? That brings us to $200 trillion just at those levels. And this could happen over the next 5, 6, 7 years. All right. I'll get more to the time frame. We'll break this math down a little bit more. But that would put it, one Bitcoin to $10 million. It's a big number. $10 million just for getting these pieces. Now, we're not even adding all the other use cases, the money exchanging. We're not including all the technologies being built on Bitcoin. We're just talking about store of value assets only. All right. So you can see that math. Now, let's keep going here. Now, remember, there's no such thing as certainties, there's only probabilities. So is this a probable outcome? Well, what we do know is pretty much certain. 99% certain that fiat is dead. Fiat is crashing. Fiat was an experiment. We're 52 years into this experiment, 5,000 years of using sound money, 52 years of fiat, and it's dead. It's over. There's pretty much no way it can continue from here. Like I said, they're going to have to figure out a way to bring some trust back into the system. So what options do we have? Well, I did a video a couple months ago in Amsterdam, or I gave a talk at a conference in Amsterdam a couple months ago. Let's go ahead and just play this clip so you can hear it.
We can see the system is shifting. If you're paying attention, they're buying gold. The problem is it already failed before. We live in an information world today. We need money to transfer at the speed of our transactions over the internet, and gold can't do that. Gold requires trust. Since gold can't transfer immediately, it requires someone to hold a ledger. And if someone's holding the ledger, we must trust that person. But trust is lost. So if that doesn't work, if we don't go back to commodities, where do we go? Well, the next solution is central bank digital currencies, because that should fix everything, right? The CBDCs seem to be the next logical step. But the problem is, I would call this not de-evolution, I'd call it zero evolution, because it's basically the exact same thing that we have right now. It still allows the central banks to print unlimited amounts of money. So if we have a problem of endless money printing, then we need to fix it. We need a solution that has a fixed supply. It doesn't allow anybody to have endless money printing. And in a multipolar world where we're no longer in the current monetary order or the current international order that we have today, a US-led order with a US dollar reserve currency in a paper fiat monetary system, moving to a multipolar world, how does the world move forward when there is no trust? In a world where trust is gone, it's almost like we need a decentralized ledger that's trustless. And so in this new world order that we're going into, the question is left, if not Bitcoin, then what?
All right, so you can hear from there, like the options are, one, we go back to gold, but gold already failed because it's old technology. We live in a world of instant transactions, and we need instant settlement, but gold can never do that without adding debt and adding trust in the system, which there is no trust in the system anymore. So gold doesn't work. The other option is, well, a CBDC, but that's basically still fiat, and the problem is the unlimited money printing and the debt. So that doesn't fix it either. So as I put in the question at the end of that presentation, if not Bitcoin, then what? So it's not guaranteed, but is it at least probable? Do you think there's a 20% chance that people move to it? I mean, we're certainly seeing that happen now. Is there a 30, 40, 50% chance? We'll come back to that in a second. Let's look at some of the time frames this is happening on. Now remember, I said this is an evolutionary process. One of the biggest problems that people have with understanding this is they expect way too much too soon. Imagine you and I walking through a forest of redwoods and we find this little tree like this big. And I'm like, oh my gosh, look at this little tree. Look how cool this is. Can you imagine that this tree one day is going to be as big as these other trees? And you're like, oh, that's stupid, Mark. That tree will never be that big. Look how small it is. How could it ever grow that big? And I'm like, well, but give it time. Give it a couple decades, like it'll get there, right? So you have to understand things take time and there's an evolutionary path that things have to go down. Another image by ChatGPT showing this evolutionary path. So what am I talking about? Let's take a look at this evolutionary path. So remember, as I said, money, if you study thousands of years of history of money, rocks, feathers, seashells, gold, you understand it was always emergent and it was always an evolution. What happens is it starts right here as a collectible. Oh, this is a pretty cool rock. I think I'm gonna keep it. It's a collectible. Oh, look at this baseball card, this Pokemon card. I like this, I'll collect it. Now, there's a lot of things that become collectibles, but if, maybe, sometimes, they could evolve to the next stage, which could become a store of value. So, baseball cards are stores of value. Some people store millions of dollars in baseball cards, Pokemon cards, watches. Not all collectibles make the evolution to store of value, but a lot do. Now, if, maybe, if they have the right attributes of money, portable, divisible, durable, recognizable, things like that, then maybe it could evolve to the next stage from a store value to a medium of exchange. Okay, so now it's big enough, it's a big enough asset class, it's widely accepted, it has the right attributes, like I said, and now people use it as a medium of exchange. And then maybe if it could, we could evolve to the next stage, which is a unit of account, which means everything's priced in that thing. Now, right now, everything's priced in dollars. Oil's priced in dollars. Gold's priced in dollars. Most of the world prices things in dollars because it is the currency of the world. Now, some countries have other currencies, but you get my point. You're still pricing it in that currency. So this is the evolutionary path. I think we are somewhere right around here. We've already checked all these boxes and we have a little bit ways to go. Now, what time frame are we looking at? All right, I showed you the path. What is the time frame? Now, that evolutionary path doesn't mean it's guaranteed. Remember, life is about probabilities, but we can continue to watch that. Now, over what time frame? Now, when you look back through technological revolutions, you realize they happen about every 50 years. You've heard me talk extensively about technology cycles. So this is a path. This is where Bitcoin started right here. And we are sitting somewhere right about here right now. We're in this path. You're not too late. We still have all this to go right here before we start to level out. And I think we really see all this happen by about 2050. So I don't know where you're at in your stage of life right now. You could be alive to see this happen. Now, none of this is guaranteed, but this is the most probable outcome. Going back to old technology of gold or what? That's the question. And you can see we're rapidly heading for this. Now, we're literally living through this. We're literally watching this revolution. We're watching this financial revolution cycle end right in front of us.
There's a lot happening these days, but I have just the thing to get you up to speed on what matters without taking too much of your time. The 7 from the Washington Post is a podcast that gives you the 7 most important and interesting stories, and we always try to save room for something fun. You get it all in about 7 minutes or less. I'm Hannah Jewell. I'll get you caught up with the 7 every weekday. So follow the 7 right now.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Asking the right questions can greatly impact your future, especially when it comes to your finances. So if you're looking for a financial advisor you can trust, certified financial planner professionals are committed to acting in your best interest. That's why it's got to be a CFP. Find your CFP professional at letsmakeaplan.org.
Okay, great. So now you understand what it's attacking, value itself. You understand that's the evolutionary path and what that process looks like. You understand the time frame. Now let's talk about the prices. Now, I talked about 43 billion, you know, in 50, 60 years from now. But where is it in a year from now, or 4 or 5 years from now, or 7 or 8 years from now? Let's talk about that for now. All right, so Hal Finney was one of the main developers that developed Bitcoin. He worked with Satoshi Nakamoto, which, yes, nobody knows who he is, but we know lots of the other developers that worked on it with Satoshi, including Hal Finney, Adam Back, Nick Szabo, et cetera. So Hal Finney was a developer. Now, back in 2009, when it was released, we just got a whole bunch of Satoshi's emails released to the public. We can see this was January 10th, 2009. And he said here, announcing the first release of Bitcoin. Pretty cool. But we can see through those emails, I sort of summarized it here so you can see it easier. Hal Finney predicted $22 million Bitcoin. This was back in 2009 when it was first released. He said, not based on mere speculation, but rather on a thoughtful analysis of Bitcoin's potential as a global payment system. So he's backing into the math, sort of the same way I am. The collective value of Bitcoin would align with the total wealth of the world. Wealth of the world divided by the asset, unit of account, which he estimated to be within the range of $100 trillion to $300 trillion. That was in 2009. Today, it's about $900 trillion. By dividing this value among the limited supply of 21 million Bitcoin, Finney came up with a $22 million price per Bitcoin. That was in 2009 when it was first invented. You could have picked it up for a couple of pennies, but he saw that vision that we're rapidly heading towards. What about, let's hear from Chamath. Chamath is a prolific investor in Silicon Valley, early into Facebook, billionaire. Let's hear what he had to say.
Bitcoin, that falls into that category because that's what that is. 39,000. Where's it going?
I mean, can you play the clip in 2012 and 13 when it was at 200 and everybody was laughing at me on CNBC every time I would talk about Bitcoin? Where is it going? It's probably going to 100, then 150, then 200,000. In what period? I don't know. 5 years, 10 years, but it's going there. And the reason is because every time you see all of this stuff happening, it just reminds you that, wow, our leaders are not as trustworthy and reliable as they used to be. And so just in case, we really do need to have some kind of, you know, insurance we can keep under our pillow that gives us some access to an uncorrelated hedge.
All right. Now, mind you, this video is from 2021. So he's talking about it going to 100, 150, all the way up to $1 million, which it's certainly doing. He says $1 million by 2040. That's the time frame he's on. What else we have? We have Fidelity. Fidelity is, I think, the second largest asset manager in the US. They do a lot of research on Bitcoin. It's the second largest Bitcoin ETF. They predict $1 billion for one Bitcoin by 2038. The director of global macro at Fidelity Investments thinks a single Bitcoin could reach 1 billion by the year 2038. A lot of what he's done is rooted in, and he's come at this from a bunch of angles. Specifically, he says it's rooted in Metcalfe's law, which is that a network continues to grow faster and faster and faster, becomes more valuable. And he says it'll grow to about 1 million per Bitcoin by 2030. So 1 million by 2030, 1 billion by 2038, based off of that. Now, Fidelity, like I said, they put out a ton of good research and data on this, one of which is this Metcalfe's law. And you can see how this price arc is working. It doesn't go up hyperbolically forever, right? It doesn't go up straight line. It starts to taper off, but yet it still goes up. We have $1 million Bitcoin, you know, right about here. And you can see that. I'll have this other chart right here that I think is really good. Fidelity put together. You can get all this information directly off of their website. But this shows the different analogs. So this is the price, the Bitcoin price arc right here. And I know for the Bitcoin skeptics, I know it crashes, right? So it goes super high and then it crashes all the way back down. And then it stays below the trend line. And then it goes super high and then it crashes all the way down again. And it stays below the trend line. And it goes super high and it crashes all the way down. Now, some people go, well, why wouldn't I just sell here and buy right here? Sure, you can certainly try that. Or you could just wait and sit and go along for the ride. Now, what about me? Where do I think it's going to go? Well, I think $1 million by 2030 seems pretty realistic to me. We'll see. Again, in the world of possibilities and probabilities, I think it's highly probable we'll get there. It's certainly not guaranteed, which is why I don't put 100% of my money in. We'll come back to that in a minute. But I think in the next 18 months, $100,000 to $150,000 Bitcoin is kind of what I'm thinking. That's a 2 to 3x return from here. I don't know of any other asset I can put my money into right now today that can get me that type of return. So that's kind of what I'm thinking. All right, so now that you have this information, what are you going to do with it? What do you do? Well, In the famous words of Satoshi Nakamoto, he said that it might make sense to get some just in case it catches on. So back to the world of probabilities, all right? Just like that show I told you I was watching, everything's a probability. So do you think that there is a 50% chance that Bitcoin gets to $150,000 in the next 2 years? Okay, and it's $50,000 today, that's a 2x upside with a 1x downside, it's pretty good odds. You have a 50% conviction of that. How much money should you put in? Maybe put in 50%, hold the other 50%. You can average in. So you can buy it, you should secure it and hold it, and you can either lump sum in, you can put that money in, or you can dollar cost average in over time. So buy it, that's the first thing. Do you have some? Do you have enough? How much should you have? It depends off your conviction. Now, what we're seeing Wall Street with the ETFs, they're putting 2 to 5% allocations in. You put 2 to 5% allocation in, even if it drops by 50%, it's barely even going to be noticed. However, if it goes to where we think it can, then your portfolio is going to be looking pretty dang good. Now, if you're crazy and you have a lot of conviction like I do, you might want 30, 40, 50, 60% allocation to Bitcoin. Now, it also depends on how much money you have. So there's other factors. You need to figure that out for yourself. Buy it, then you need to secure it and hold it. The revolutionary feature of Bitcoin is that I can custody it and secure it and store it myself. And so you should certainly do that. I recommend using a hardware wallet to do that. Plenty of help online. Check that out. Go to BTC Sessions on YouTube. He can show you how to do that. And then again, like I said, should I buy it now? Just throw my cash in as a lump sum, or should I average in over time? It depends on where your conviction is. But this video has gone long. That's about as much as I can put into it right now, but I'll make more videos. Let me know which of these you want me to dig into more. Let me know what you think. Leave me a comment down below. Subscribe if you're not subscribed, and that's what I got. To your success. I'm out.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, ah, yeah. Love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.